This is Death and Dying, a Lifelong Practice, number 45. This is an extraordinary dialogue with Camille and the daughter of Cab Calloway, Chris Calloway.
Hello, this is Camille Adair Norwick. Welcome to Death and Dying, a Lifelong Practice, where we explore living more fully by embracing transitions and the natural cycles of life and death.
Take your time. Know who you are before you go. And you'll know.
Today we have a special podcast in honor of our dear friend Chris Calloway, and it's her birthday today. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Camille.
Thank you so much for joining us on this sacred day of yours.
Thank you, sweetie. I appreciate that.
So I would love to talk with you about your experience with cancer. And for the audience, you know, they're used to me talking about cancer at the very end stage in relationship to death and dying. And as we talk on this podcast about dying being something that is a long process and could potentially be a lifelong practice, something that we're conscious of and preparing for our entire lives. And I'd like to explore that with you because we actually have not had anyone on the show who is dealing with something that could potentially be a terminal illness, but really isn't, but sort of is that wake-up call.
Definitely.
And I was wondering if you would be willing to take us on a journey from the time of your diagnosis.
Okay. To today.
Just sort of starting with the diagnosis and what that was like for you.
Well, first of all, the initial diagnosis was in 1987. And at the time, I was practicing I was participating in a religious practice of chanting of a Buddhist mantra, and it was just so bizarre because I went for a mammogram and the doctor called me back and said you need to come into my office, and I went in and I wasn't even thinking anything, and then the funny thing was, he had put my little mammogram x-ray up on that little white thing that they do where they put the light on behind it. Mm-hmm. And then he took a magnifying glass, you know, one of those little hand magnifying things, and he held it up and he said, you see that tiny little dot? And I'm squinting and he's magnifying the whole thing. He said, well, that's the beginning of intracellular cancer. And I thought, geez, you can't see the thing. It's just so, it's so small. And, excuse me. And then the decision was made to do a biopsy on it. And then the decision was made to do the mastectomy. At the time, like I said, I was practicing this mantra. And I went to the seniors of the organization and I said, well, you know, they tell me I have cancer. What am I supposed to do? And the senior said, well, you have to chant a million of these mantras. And I'm like, wait a minute. Cancer is probably better than having to chant a million of these mantras. You know what I mean? This is like, this is crazy. This is insane. My grace, of course, was the fact that becoming as involved in the challenge of chanting a million of these mantras, my life condition, my spiritual energy, my consciousness, everything was raised to a much higher level, to the point where doctor's appointments were like, you know, is this going to take much longer? Because I really have got to get back. I've got something to do. You know, it's like, well, I'm up to 500 or I'm up to, you know, 600 or something. And it kept me in a mindset that was above the mundane, but above the ordinary experience of this kind of freaky, crazy thing. And I did fine. We did the mastectomy. The cancer was gone, and that was all there was. And I went on with my life. That was, what, how many years ago? And then here in Santa Fe, I began to have a reoccurrence. I found another lump. We got rid of the lump. And it's been a process of on and on after, you know, after that. For me, it's never been about life or death, Camille. It's been about my spiritual journey. And so that the fear of, oh, I'm going to die, is not my first concern with this experience of cancer. Of course, when we got to the chemo stage, which of course is, you know, the infinite King Kong boogeyman, you know, Saddam Hussein of the cancer world, you know, this is this terrible thing that's just going to ravage your body and make you so terrible. And it came back, and it was to the point where I was needing the chemo, was when she flung herself on the floor and just was like, oh, I'm going to die. And the little voice said, and I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm going to die. I've got cancer. I'm going to die. And the little voice was like, yeah, and? And of course, in my only true dramatic way, it's like, you can't mock me. Why are you mocking me with this is very tragic. This is real. And the little voice said, you know, no, honey, little angel baby, precious child of God, of course you're going to die. Life is a terminal disease. No one gets out of here alive. So welcome to a reality. Welcome to a wisdom. Welcome to a place of understanding and realism that is sacred.
And is this part of your spirituality?
Totally.
Okay.
Totally. See. Mm. So then the crying, which was so amazing, then the crying continued in the reality of that. Into tears for all of the women who lost their sons in Vietnam, or all of the mothers that were watching their children die in Baghdad, and all of the starving children in Sudan, and so on and so forth. And as a result, my heart just swole up. It just opened to this magnanimous state of compassion that began for myself. And I was graced enough to be able to step into that and to endure that, to let it open up my heart to have compassion for every suffering that there is.
And that is, in a way, the grace and the gift, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. And then I guess because I started really fantasizing about dying. And thinking, well, people, we as humans are very excited and we prepare for the birth of a soul coming in. And it's an expectation and it's exciting. And there's a preparation that's made for the coming in. And it is a mystery as that soul emerges from the womb into this dimension. And we're excited, and it's miraculous, and it's mysterious. And I thought, well, why couldn't the other side of that be the same way? And I began to think, well, wow, this could be great. You know what I mean? This could be terrific if I was able to prepare and able to surrender to this final or ultimate human experience as I take off, you know, out of this dimension. So these are the kind of things I've been playing with, and I've come to acknowledge and honor myself in several different roles, perhaps, in this journey of cancer. The first one being what I like to refer to myself as a person living with cancer survivor. That over these many, many years, I have managed to sustain my life and to be living with the cancer and a survivor of the cancer, overcoming the cancer to the point where I'm still breathing. And there are then those times, though, when I know finally, and this is a big piece that I've just kind of recognized just recently, there are the days when I'm a cancer patient. And those are the days when there is fear. And those are the days when there is trepidation. And those are the days when there is anxiety and maybe a little bit of anger. And I'm extremely vulnerable. And it's, I think, difficult for people to be with me. It's a clinical situation. It definitely needs nurses, and it definitely needs doctors, and it definitely needs technology, and it needs the science of the cancer situation. When I'm a cancer patient, when I'm a survivor, it's like, let's party.
So are there ways in which you can really identify that your life has changed, the quality of it has changed, or even sort of the way in which you spend your days has changed since your diagnosis?
Well, totally. There are days when I don't feel well. And on those days, I've learned to, as the Buddhists say, to be present. Those are the days, guess what? I don't feel well. It's pretty simple. And it's I've been able to create for myself a relationship with myself in those situations where it's okay. It's absolutely okay. And from the point of saying, well, you know, I don't feel well, I need to do the dishes, I need to get out and go pay the bills, or you should answer the telephone and talk to somebody, and all of those things are kind of like, now how important is that in comparison to you being present and being at peace mm-hmm. in the moment, knowing full well that there are leaves on the trees and there are grains of dirt and sand on this massive planet that are in perfect order. Let it go. You're just fine. You're exactly where you need to be right now. And release yourself and be there. And that has changed everything. In terms of, you know, some people are contentious, and you know, this saying goes, you better pick your argument, you know, pick your battle. The living with cancer has given me great skill at choosing what to get upset about. It's like, oh, the phone bill's late. Well, I think I'll have a fit over that. Right. No, I think you need to compare that with, you know, possibly being very, very sick with cancer and not able to get out of the bed.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So what's the 10 and what's the 3? And I think it's leveled out my playing field. It's leveled out my personality. It's leveled out my little demons. The demons have become much more friendly at this point because I think they really like to chill out, you know?
Mm.
And that's been the gift and the grace. And the more I am able to surrender to that, the better the quality of my life is.
Mm. So beautifully put. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So you're talking a lot about how that's impacted you in your relationship with yourself, and it reminds me of what Andrea Levine said in the interview that I had with her and Stephen for the film Solace that I'm right now editing, is that, she has leukemia, and she talks about cancer being a teacher's training.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that you're saying just reminds me of that. It's almost like it's a spiritual path unto itself.
I totally think it is.
Yeah.
I kind of like atrophy when I hear people talk about chemo being rat poison or, you know, this deadly killer stuff. I just I feel bad for people that see it that way. I mean, I used to bless the chemo. I used to see it and give it an intention. And know that it was the juice of the mother. It was the mother's embryonic fluid that was going into my body. And, you know, at the highest point, it would meet the cancer cells and, like, you know, love them into extinction. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just like that, you know, that whole, it's not Ramakrishna. Which one is it? The guy who writes the poetry about the love.
Rumi?
Rumi. Mm-hmm. How Rumi talks about the love being so, so intense that it just diffuses everything. It burns and it ignites and it just pulls that whole thing, the whole heart thing. And that was the way I saw certainly my first round of chemo.
Mm.
I believe right now that I've just, you know, just doing good. I have a healing. I just don't. People say, I say to people, well, I'm having chemo, and they go, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, no, there's really no need to be sorry. You might want to feel sorry if I lived in Sudan and in a refugee camp with no clean water and no toilets and no food and no safety. I mean, you might want to feel sorry if, you know, I was living in Baghdad where I didn't know whether my home was going to be bombed or if my loved ones were going to go out in the street and never come back. You might want to, but I have a roof over my head. I have food in my refrigerator. I have a refrigerator. I have a bathroom. I have toilet. I have fresh water. I have excellent, excellent medical attention.
So what would you rather have people say to you?
Oh, well, that's kind of, well, I would, oh, let's see. How's that going? How's that going?
It's so like when to normalize it as opposed to, because it seems to me like in a way we project suffering on people when maybe there's not the suffering that we think that there is. And
right.
The suffering really has to do with our discomfort with what's going on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, right now, my tumor markers have really jumped up, and I'm actually trying to set a world record on how many different chemos I can take before I get to the remission chemo. Okay. And it's kind of like a little game of taking different candies or different, you know, ointments or things like that to find out which one works best. But my markers kind of have shot up. The last two treatments were not very effective. And I'm hearing, just like you're saying, in the voice of some loved ones, you know, a fear. And that to me is now my next challenge, is to then release myself from connection with their fear. I can't remove their fear, but I can release myself from being connected to their fear. And again, it's just the gift of cancer. You know, it's saving my life. It's giving me grace, and it's giving me, you know, the footsteps to walk the walk that I do think I came here to do. I'll never forget being like, oh gosh, must have been about 10 or 11 years old. And I was laying in my bed and I closed my eyes, and I said to myself, okay, so my eyes are closed. I don't see anything out there. I don't see my room. I don't see where I am. Is that because it disappeared, or is it because my eyes are closed and I'm not seeing it? And so on this 50-year journey, I'm understanding that, you know, it is because I'm not seeing it that it's not there. That it is from this subjective point of view that I create my life and I create my existence and the way it goes.
Well, I think it's really important to hear your story, because if you think about the number of people in the world that deal with cancer, it's staggering. And at the same time, how scary that C word is for people.
It is.
And, you know, you hear, if someone said, I'm going to move to Tibet and I'm going to enroll in this intensive monk training, that's, you know, I mean, there could just very well be more difficulty in that path than having cancer. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like, but really, in a way, it's like, there are opportunities that come our way that are appropriate for us, that are a sophisticated spiritual path.
Mm-hmm.
This happens to be one of them, and this is yours.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, hopefully in our lifetimes, we'll see a shift with that so that we can actually celebrate that or say congratulations, because on some level it's like you've accepted
right. A
big journey and a big training.
Yes.
You know?
Well, that's what I wanted.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm firmly convinced I'm extraterrestrial, and you know, when everybody was like, You know, and they're saying, "We've got to send the heavy troops down there now because, you know, we've got this huge transformation thing going on, like a little woo-woo, you know, with DNA and electromagnetic fields and all that stuff." I mean, I love all that. That mm-hmm. resonates totally with me. I mean, I watch NASA video files, you know, the whole space shuttle thing, and I'm like, oh, look, that's just like so cool. It's just, I resonate so hard with that. But excuse me. And then trying to come into this dimension and deal with the dimension. For me, at some level, it's just been, without the cancer, I probably would just have, you know, folded up my mission and, you know, just done my time and got out of here. But with the cancer, it's kept the mission very much in focus. Mm. I've promised Spirit, God, higher power, whatever it is, that whenever I go into the Cancer Institute of New Mexico, which is where I take my treatment, that I'm dressed, I'm all made up, I have on something nice, and I'm smiling. And, you know, to go into the infusion room, which just used to terrify me because, you know, chemo was death. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, you know, chemo was, what was it? Not the way we were. What was the one with Ally McGraw when she died of cancer in the movie?
Mm.
And then there was The Rose. Was it The Rose?
The love story.
Love story. Oh, Paulie, she's like got the bucket there. She's
right.
vomiting the whole thing. It's just disgusting. The whole thing was just suffer.
Mm-hmm.
So going into the infusion room was like, ugh, a trauma for me. I mean, I was blessed in my first experience that I had access to two chemo nurses, one in particular, that brought a higher consciousness and a compassion and a vibrancy or an energy into the infusion space that I was able to pick up on that was better than what I thought it would be and much more spiritual than I thought it would be. And I was deeply grateful to having, again, the grace to be able to step into that type of situation and be aware that that's what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So it was nurturing, and I was able to go there. But I go into the infusion center, and, you know, there are six sick people there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're sitting in their little chairs, and they're taking their little, you know, God-given medicine, and their little faces are down. And, I mean, I'll go sit next to some guy, and I'm going to get my infusion. And he's looking around, and the nurse says to me, "Well, is there anything I can get for you before we get started?" And I say, "Yeah, I'd love to have an ice-cold Corona." And the little guy next to me looks at me, you know, he looks and he looks. And so then she said, so then she left or something. And I'd say that I leaned over to him. I said, "So where are the dancing girls?" And he's like, finally, he's laughing. And he goes and he looks at me and he goes, "You know, I got to tell you, I haven't laughed like this all day. I've never laughed like this when I was taking chemo." I said, "Oh, come on in here, honey. We're having a grand old time. Look at us getting good old medicine. Look how God's taking care of us.
Oh.
We are it. And, you know, we are the chosen ones. Come on. Get with it. Honor your power. Honor your grace and your medicine." So they see me coming, and I've got some really good friends. You know, friends, my friends in chemo. My chemo friends. Because I have that ability.
Mm-hmm.
I have that. I'm the actress. I'm the entertainer. And I truly wish to resonate with the joy of life.
I'm curious about that archetype, the actress, the entertainer. You come from a family of entertainers, your dad being Cab Calloway. Because I'm not at all from a family of entertainers. So this is sort of something that I wonder about. How much of that is that deep within you? I mean, that's not something that you have to turn on. That's just very much part of who you are.
Exactly.
And is that part of who you are? Do you feel like that's learned? Or is that sort of part of your essence? I'm just curious about that. Because I am like the opposite. I have a tendency to go like deep into hermit mode.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be the one in the Cancer Institute like in hermit mode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really marvel at people who can do that and who can bring, because I think humor is such a powerful healing tool and who can sort of, you know, you break that whatever that mood that's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's really a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had an astrological chart done one time where the guy explained to me why I was this kind of outgoing personality with, you know, all kinds of stuff and all kinds of houses and all kinds of outrageous, powerful stuff. No, it's just the way I am.
Uh-huh.
7 years old. I cannot possibly eat these lima beans. I will absolutely perish if I do. I mean, it's, oh, you're so dramatic. Oh, you're so over the top. And it's my modus operandi. It's the way, it's the gift that I've been given. And I, again, am indebted to the cancer journey.
Mm-hmm.
Because the longer I stay on the journey, the more I realize how to use that outgoing ability to make people smile or make people feel better about themselves in specifically a mission kind of a way that will serve and benefit humankind, not just to pay the rent or because I'm Beyonce. You know what I'm saying? But because, and it's taken me 60 years to really understand. And I'm at a transformational place now where I really feel as though I've completed a spiritual transformation. Mm. What is happening now is that energetically, because of the differences in, time linear line, I'm trying to catch up with my transformation. I'm trying to step into my transformation. But that, because I'm just still in my little human thing, I'm just like kind of trotting. It's done. It's completed. I just have to step into it. And that's what's happening. And it's fascinating. And I hope that I'm given the opportunity to serve humanity, serve mankind, and support and let us all understand how blessed we are, and how if we choose, we can resonate with joy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I've questioned the fact that, you know, I took the psyac tea or I did the this or this one did the healing on me and I still have the cancer. And it was kind of like, whoa, you know, you read all these stories about everybody going into instant remission. Where's mine? It's like, no, Chris, that's really not the issue here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yours is right here. Yours is right in front of you. So, you know, that I watched my auntie die. I lost my son 4 years ago, and that was kind of like my first real slam in the face with the death and dying thing. And in studying Buddhism, I was, you know, kind of understanding at a spiritual level when one leaves this dimension, when one leaves this body, having to face that with my son, whom I had been with like an hour and a half prior to his passing, and then going back and seeing his body without the spirit in it was, I hope it doesn't sound too bizarre, but was fascinating. You know, I mean, I had seen my father's dead body and that type of thing. And those things are just so terrifying. We've been programmed to think that they're just so scary, you know what I'm saying? And there's something so blessed and so miraculous, the same mystery as the baby coming in.
I completely agree with you.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
it's just
a
mystery. It's like, yes. Oh my gosh, look at it. It's just like so.
And so, when you see the body,
yeah,
there's something really incredible about that, isn't it? Because you know it's the precious body, but it's not everything.
No, it isn't. And that's where I think we're headed. I do believe that globally and humanly we're in transformation, and that the darkness that's pervasive all around us, you know, could certainly be equated to the cancer darkness that's eating things up and perpetuating its devastation everywhere it goes and festering and growing and eating and growing and eating and growing. And so then in a small way, my attempts to adjust this and make it holy will have an effect on the total transformation. Because it dawned on me, Camille, the other day. I'm thinking, whoa, you know, people are born, I don't know, I listened to the radio or something, and they were talking about the statistics, the birth statistics, mm-hmm. and people are being born every 3 minutes or something like that. And people are dying every 3 minutes. And I thought, yeah, there's a bunch of folk on this planet. There's just like a whole bunch of souls up here. So I got this vision of this kind of like passage, like the Holland Tunnel or something. I don't know if you've ever been to New York or something, but like this two-lane highway, especially like the Holland Tunnel, where one's going one direction and the other one's going the other direction. And it's this constant flow. It never stops. It's
and it a would constant look like that, flow. Wouldn't it, if you think of the numbers?
I would just think so.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, Jesus, what the heck are you afraid of? Just jump in the tunnel.
Right.
You know, get on the train, girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other thing, too, about the dying thing is like, okay, go, oh, my God. Oh, she died. Oh, that's so terrible. Terrible? Don't get me wrong. Life is great. But some of this human stuff is a little boring, a little dull. And it's just kind of very restrictive.
It can
and
be laborious.
Laborious, yeah. And repetitive, and then redundant. So it's almost like when one would pass from this dimension to whatever, I like to say they've gone to glory.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say they're just out of the body. Oh, this is going to be so much better. This is going to be just a little bit lighter, you know what I'm saying? Because I believe that my soul is as big as the universe.
Mm-hmm.
My soul and my wisdom and my truth and my reality is as large as anything there is.
Mm-hmm.
I almost look forward to going back to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, and I think that the fact that you've done meditation and a Buddhist practice, not that I'm just a proponent of Buddhism, but I think any time when we have an internal practice, it's like going inside, that's where the big world is. And because you've already touched those places, you have a conscious awareness of your largeness and your expansiveness. And I think that that's really wonderful. And I'd like to share a story with you if I could. I have a client right now, and I can talk about her because she's in the film and she's signed releases. And so all of her stuff is really sort of out in the open at this point in her process. And she has cervical cancer. And 2 weeks ago, Wednesday, which is part of the reason why I have not been on the show, things have been pretty busy for me with my hospice practice, so we skipped a couple weeks of shows. I ended up spending the night with her because it was the night that we thought she was bleeding to death.
Hmm.
And, I mean, she lost a lot of blood, and there were a lot of people that were called to the house to say the final goodbyes, and her son was there. And she also lost a son 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and actually has had communication with him and visions of him in the last few weeks as she's getting closer. But something that has happened, she's talked about being perched. The last few months, she talks about feeling like she's perched in the netherworld, that she's partly here and partly on the other side. And, you know, sort of what it's like for her living in that in-between place. But she even went further this time and actually was very, very close to dying. And her vital signs, I mean, I thought for sure this was it, you know. I mean, she showed signs of actively dying, and it was just because she's fairly young, you know, she really made this comeback. But she talked about an experience that she had where she was laying there and someone in the room said, "Mary, go to the light." And she said it broke her out of this focus and this concentration for where she was going. She said there was a huge, dark purple, very dark, blackish purple presence in the room, or energy in the room. And she said it was the most comforting energy place that you could ever possibly imagine in your human mind.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "I was working so hard to get there."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "When I heard someone say, 'Go to the light,' it distracted me."
Sure enough, did, didn't
and
it?
And then she said, I just said out loud, "Stop talking."
Yes.
You know, because she thought, wait a minute, it's not light.
Mm-hmm.
But then she got into her head. It's not that it's like negative. It's that it's this beautiful dark purple black place that I'm going. And she just has talked about that as the most incredible thing. And since then, her energy has really changed. And she just is so not afraid.
Yes.
It's almost like she's just kind of like, When okay. is it going to happen? Right. I'm ready.
Yeah. Whenever you hear it, whenever mm-hmm. you pick me up, I'm ready.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was really wonderful for everyone involved. It was really wonderful to watch her get be that close mm. and then to be able to mm. come back and talk about it and to actually talk about, and I'm not doing it justice, but to talk about the quality of this energy mm. and this place that she was going, mm-hmm. that was drawing her, that was so comforting.
Mm. Mm.
And it reminds me of what you're saying.
Well, that makes me feel good too. Cause yeah. I mean, I'm, you know, all this is coming from up above and it's coming through me. I open my mouth and let it come out and then have to step into it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't want to give the impression to anyone that, that may be listening that, you know, this is, like putting some, microwave popcorn in the microwave, you know, and you just set it for 3 minutes and watch it pop and then take it out and eat it. It's, there are steps along the way. There is energy that's constantly shifting and there is fear and there is anxiety and there is trepidation. But,
well, it's like any teacher's training. Mm-hmm. You're going to experience the darkest of the dark, mm-hmm. aren't you? And the lightest of the light.
Have to.
Yeah.
Have to. And right now my mantra, I mean, I don't know, maybe good religious Christian Catholic people would be upset with me, but right now I'm into like the second half of the rosary, which is I get this kind of clump in my throat or an anxiety will come in and I'll just, you know, feel anxious or feel afraid or feel tight or whatever, and I just kind of go, you know, Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for me now and at the hour of my death. And then I'll stop and I'll say, I can't believe you said that. What do you mean? So like every day you're talking about the hour of your death? What's up with that? And I'm like, well, that's what it is. That's what it is. If I know that the benevolent energies, the love of God, the perfection that brings a leaf out of a twig is with me at the hour of my death, well, golly, that's going to be great. You know, I've got a little support team going here. So it's very interesting because I will say that at least 3 or 4 or 5 times a day. And I always listen to myself say, pray for me now, which is really the impetus of the mantra is pray for me now. I'm confused. I don't know what I'm doing. I feel afraid. I'm lost. I don't know what's happening. So pray for me now in your benevolent wisdom of the universe. And this is my prayer, and as we pray together, pray for me now. But then, and at the hour of my death, just like knocks me off the bench. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just like, how can you be there, Chris? It's like, well, because that's what's happening. And it's very comforting and it's very nurturing to think that the energies of love that support the universe and support the life and the living would be as focused with me at that point. That's
I find the rosary
lovely.
I find that part of the rosary hugely comforting. Oh, and I've had some of my most take me to my knees in a good way moments around listening to the rosary mm-hmm. and this work with Catholic families, and it's just been a huge mm-hmm. thing for me. I think it is. There's something just really gorgeous about that and humbling and comforting all at the same time.
Well, I was knocked out when I really realized that it said, Holy Mary, Mother of God.
That's huge.
That's it.
That's how I felt, Chris.
Exactly.
I felt the same thing.
That's
Holy
it right there.
Mary, Mother of God.
Let's get some goddess
huge.
Energy in here. Come
oh,
on.
Oh, okay. I love it. I've spent a lot of time crying listening to people say the rosary mm-hmm. because it's been so moving for
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very good. That's cool. So today I'm a survivor. Tomorrow I could be a patient, you know, which is just like kind of whiny, cranny, cranky. And please, I don't want to give anybody the impression, you know, that I'm just like walking on cloud nine. This is the third dimension. This is the dimension of cause and effect. This is the dimension of opposites. I mean, there are physical realities that are real, and I'm physical and I'm involved in those. But my focus is more on what we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my drive. That's my clutch. That's what I'm... Because I have no intentions of suffering, Camille.
Mm-hmm.
None.
Mm-hmm.
None. Okay. I mean, I've gone as far as researching assisted suicide deaths in Portland, Oregon,
mm-hmm.
in Oregon,
mm-hmm.
and having some great big huge ass party with just a whole bunch of folk doing all kinds of illegal things and having food and great time,
mm-hmm.
and it being this hoop-de-doop, and it's just like kiss everybody goodbye and get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that I think is, you know, a lot of me trying to control how it would be. And if anything sets me off, it's just the concept of suffering.
Yeah.
You know, being the victim and suffering, because that's, I don't want that.
I think you're not alone in that. I think that is ever, and when I talk with people, they say that death is not my greatest fear. The pain and the suffering
right.
that could come along with that, that's what I really fear.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're definitely not
yeah.
alone in that. And Oregon has been sort of coming up in those
yeah.
terms lately, you know.
Yeah, before it gets to the point.
To
you know, I mean, I, like I said, I watched my auntie die. I felt I needed to because I wasn't with my son when he passed away.
Mm.
And it was some kind of, not penance, but some kind of obligation that I felt as though I had to be in the space of a dying person. And to, at that moment, when the little full-time nurse came in and said, well, she's gone, you know, just about 10 minutes. She hadn't been dead
mm-hmm.
3 minutes
mm-hmm.
or something. To be able to go to her and myself and the little nurse just, you know, make a circle around her and bless her and bless her transition and pray for her moving over and above and beyond
mm-hmm.
and spraying the room with the roses scent which she loved so much and singing her off to the other side. Aunt Roxy suffered.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's one of the things that me no do, you know,
yeah.
me no do. I don't need to be a martyr.
Well, there are a lot of people out there who have a great deal of knowledge about how to assist people in that process. And I actually, because, you know, as a hospice nurse, I've dealt with that enough that I actually can visualize what I'll be wearing and what the sheets will look like and... if I'm in pain, give me the morphine.
Right.
If I, you know, I mean, all of it,
yeah.
you know, and I really actually, because of the work that I do, I don't have a fear of the suffering because I know really what's possible in the way of
okay.
medications and treatments that are very gentle that can help people through that process. And that's one of my things that I like to talk about is just increasing the awareness around that. It really is. It's not necessary. The pain and the suffering aren't necessary.
Right. Now, how do you help the loved ones? That's kind of like something that I'm probably not, you know, not afraid of dying. I would think, you know, my poor little sister.
Yeah. Well, of course, we can't take away people's yeah. pain and their suffering around
yeah.
loss. You know, that's something that as human beings, we all go through. But I think that by educating people and just sort of the reminding that this is a natural process.
Yeah.
The death, like as you said, death is like birth and we're all going there.
Yeah.
And this is this person's time and this is a sacred. How do we set this up to honor this as part of the sacred journey so that it's not pushed into the closet and seen as something fearful?
Right.
And I think when people have people around them, like a hospice team to help hold the space and help to set the space for that experience to happen, we naturally, as human beings, move into honoring the dying process as sacred.
Okay.
We really know that on a deep level, and I think it's just sort of having someone to sort of be the midwife that gives us permission and holds the space. People come into that. And then, of course, we have the grieving, which, as you said, breaks the heart and
yes.
makes it bigger.
Right.
And that is
right.
something that's painful and delicious and beautiful.
Yeah.
And we don't want to get in the way of that.
Okay. Okay.
You know?
Okay. And I know you probably, I mean, do you have to, in order to pass over or in a conscious way, I mean, do you have to know, I know there are different belief systems with different religious or semi-religious rituals, like the whole thing with the Egyptians and the tombs, and they used to bury them with all their stuff because they were going to take this big long journey. And mm-hmm. the Native Americans have their understanding thing, and you know, the Australian bush people have their thing. And I mean, I asked you the question, is it necessary to have a specific preparation in mind for a journey that is a specific journey, as in the case of the Egyptians?
Or can you
just go ahead and die? You know?
Oh, I don't think it's necessary. Yeah, I think that we're all going to die just fine. I think it's more for, depending on what our religious and spiritual beliefs are. For example, Buddhists, you know, firmly, many of them believe that the spirit hangs out and that there are the bardos that people go through. And so that period of staying home for 3 days and having people pray and chant and light incense right. and having all of that for that 3 day period before the cremation is really important. And here in Santa Fe, we have a large Buddhist community. And so we do see that. And that's uh-huh. something as a hospice community, we're really prepared to support them in. And we have had people where they're actually, we help them to get the dry ice and the whole nine yards. Uh-huh. And then there are people who just want to be taken away right away. Some people, you know, it's very individual, but you know, our job really is to go in. And depending on how soon we're brought into the picture, then we start working not only with the client, but with the family. But, you know, I have clients right now and I talk with them. It's like, what would you like to see for yourself? Mm-hmm. You know, would you like to be involved in writing your obituary? Would mm-hmm. you like to be involved in the service or the sacred gathering and the ritual that happens around your physical body? And how do you want that to go? I mean, mm-hmm. I'll, you know, one client, you know, we got into such a deep conversation that, you know, she said, oh, well, I guess I want this mortuary, when she found out it was the only one in town that wouldn't transport her body before it was cremated. You know, a lot of people right. don't know that, but when right. you start getting into those details, and I mean, and, you know, and we don't think about those things, but she said, well, I want to go from home to the mortuary mm-hmm. and I want to stay there and be cremated there, mm-hmm. you know, but it took a lot of conversation for her to even get to that place where she was even thinking in those right. terms. And now she's done all of this research into having a Celtic wake, and she wants to, you know, so in a way it's kind of like giving people permission to, you know, we're sitting here on your birthday.
I know.
And it's such a sacred uh-huh. thing. And it's, you've been given permission your whole life to celebrate your birthday, but we're not really given permission to celebrate our death day and to prepare
right.
for that. But
right.
it certainly is worthy of a big party right. and it certainly is worthy of preparation.
Okay. Because I was wondering about that, because I know there's a lot of little systematic things, and, you know, and Jewish people sit Shiva, and they have to put them in the ground by a certain, I mean, and I guess it's all just practical stuff that just has evolved over the years. But so in order to have like a really cool transition, you don't have to go through the steps. I mean, it's not like
I don't think you have to go through the steps, but I think to give it some thought, just to mm-hmm. get to your own authentic place mm-hmm. about it, is really worth something. Because, you know, for me, just being around as many people as I am now, I'm, even though I'm not a practicing Buddhist, I don't necessarily want to like need to stay home for 3 days, but I know that I don't want to be shipped off right away.
Right.
I definitely want to stay put for a while and have my loved ones around me mm-hmm. and, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's just something I've become clear on. And it's mm-hmm. not something that I can explain mm-hmm. or I know why, or I have specific doctrine around. It's just a feeling that I have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I love this, though. This is and on my birthday, which, I don't know, I've never been a big birthday person anyway, so it's okay.
But. Well, thank you for sharing your special day with us. It's really an honor.
Thank you, Camille.
Before we sign off, I'd like to let people know how they can find out more about you and the work that you do with your singing. And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that's one of the things that's kind of like fallen into proper perspective. Hmm. I used to think that my raison d'etre was to get up and entertain and be wonderful and lovely and sing and all this other kind of stuff. Now it's it's not the real focus in my life anymore. There's a bigger picture. But I'm having a lot of fun. We have a family run business called Creative Arts by Callaway LLC, and we are preparing many activities to celebrate the centennial of my dad. Well, his 100th birthday would be 2007-2008.
Oh wow!
So we're doing a bunch of really nice things there, a postage stamp and star on Hollywood Boulevard and awards and documentaries and all kinds of stuff
nice.
Like that. My contribution to that is a podcast that I'm doing on a regular basis that's that is entitled Callaway Heidi Ho.com. I'm getting it straight slowly but surely. And I'm telling, I'm playing the character of your main queen. And I'm telling great Cab Calloway stories, stories out of the era of the big bands, 1930s and 40s, stories about the Calloway legacy and how it has perpetuated and influenced contemporary music and music of the 20th century. And it's a ton of fun. I talk a lot of jive talk. And so it's CallawayHeidiHo.com.
And we'll have that on the website as well.
Please listen in. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
And you can get links from there to the Creative Arts by Calloway website, my family website, which has a plethora of photos and information and just tons of really cool Cab Calloway stuff.
Oh, that's so great.
It's nice.
Great. Well, my podcast sister, I thank you. And I have a quick question. Are you familiar with the song, and I don't know the name of it, People Get Ready, There's a Train A-Coming? Don't need no ticket, you just get on board,
right?
Do you know that song?
People get ready, there's a train a-coming. Don't need no ticket, you just get on board. That's it.
I love that song. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You made my day.
Okay, Miss Camille. Thank you, sweetie.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.